Report, Mr. Richard Blatton, the Arguable Knowledge, Ms. Jennifer McClure, the Arguable Debate.
May I proceed?
Yes.
Good morning. May it please the court. This case primarily involves only questions of law. I realize that the state has filed a motion to dismiss that remains pending, an appellate motion to dismiss. I'm not going to spend too much time unless the court has some questions about that on the motion to dismiss. Basically, with regard to the motion to dismiss, the state alleges that my client, Mr. Burgess, who has had a judgment entered against him, does not have standing to appeal from his being found liable under that judgment. I have never heard of such an argument before. I think there's absolutely no merit to it. Secondly, the state contends that Mr. Burgess, without any basis in fact, on appeal has raised for the first time an issue that my client, Mr. Burgess, doing business as Edie's Bail Bonds, did not have authority to retain counsel on behalf of the insurance company, Seneca. That had never been an issue in the trial court pursuant to rule, I believe it's rule 10 point something. I did go ahead and attach affidavits as well as some other documents establishing that the corporation certainly knew that he was hiring an attorney and that he, for the last 10 or 12 years, has known that he had authority to retain counsel, not just for his own individual liability, but as an agent on behalf of Seneca. So I think the motion to dismiss really doesn't raise any issues of merit and should be denied or overruled. Now, in connection with the actual merits of the appeal that we've raised, what we're dealing with is the process by which the state of Texas is recovering the court costs for certified mail. I have set out the statutes. We basically have three issues. The way the statutory scheme is designed is that a commissioner's court can consider and approve certified mail costs for constables and sheriffs. We all know just from experience that ordinarily sheriffs personally deliver service on people in civil litigation as well as constables. The reason why it's important to start off with the issue of whether the commissioner's court actually approves $68 for certified mail is because the clerk's office is confined by the statute that says it has to be the same as what the commissioner's court have approved. The exhibits attached both to my brief as well as the state's brief and both in the trial court and the record as well as on appeal have a generic listing of costs, and it's ambiguous, and I would say actually to the extent it's not ambiguous, it tends to show that they're talking about personal service of citations and personal service of other kinds of pleadings.
What about, let's see, it's exhibit, I don't know which it is. It's the state's exhibit called Civil and Family Cases Filing and Service Fees effective October 1. And it clearly says certified or registered mail service. It cites 51.3192 of the government code.
What exhibit is that?
Civil and Family Cases Filing and Service Fees effective October 1. It looks like it's a printout from
Harris County.
That one's Harris County.
Okay, could you direct me to a specific exhibit number, because the state has attached extraneous.
It doesn't.
Extraneous.
Exhibit 4.
Okay.
Of course, that one's Harris.
Yeah. Well, this is actually Denton County this case arises in.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I could proceed further, the exhibit that the state attached that deals with Denton County doesn't even mention the word certified mail. It just has a listing, and actually, if you look at I believe it's my exhibit, number 3, although it actually may be for the year following, the state has attached the minutes from September 2006. I attached the ones from September 2007. If you look, it says process type, and it says citation by publication, citation by posting. There's nothing in that document or the minutes indicating that they're not talking about personal service. And the first issue is whether the Commissioner's Court actually did approve $68 for certified mail, not personal service. And I submit...
Are you suggesting that the fee for personal service is $68?
Well, no, the fee, actually what they approved for personal service is $60. The state has tried to explain that. I don't think there's any evidence other than lawyers talking. That's right. That's right. We were charged $68 for certified mail, and even their own itemized list approved by the Commissioner's Court for personal service, we say, is only $60. And the state in a footnote tries to explain that as not just some kind of arbitrary figure that they threw out, that that somehow adds on the cost of issuance of a citation. But you'll note that there already is in the court costs the charge of $8 for the issuance of the citation. So it's kind of a little bit of double dipping. The next issue, that even if you assume that the Commissioner's Court meant citation by certified mail and not just personal service in their schedule, then you deal with the statute that actually does govern what they can approve for services by certified mail for sheriffs and constables. The first provision says that they can do so long as it's reasonable. We make the argument in our brief that $68, in light of the fact that certified mail and postage is somewhere around $3 to $3.50, somewhere in there. I don't have the exact figure. And we did attach, as a matter of fact, the official U.S. Postal Regulatory Commission order that was in effect at the time. We're talking about roughly $3.25 or something like that in actual postage for the service.
Was Exhibit 5 entered into evidence at any time? Or is that just an attachment?
I believe that was probably included in the trial court record. I'm not certain. However, we submit to the court that, or we'd ask the Court of Appeals to take judicial notice of it. It is a public document. It is online. It's kind of difficult to find, but once you found it, it's easy to go back and find again. The second issue is whether that's reasonable to charge between 20 and 25 times the actual postage expense for somebody to lick an envelope and put it in a box for the postman to pick up. I bought tickets to an entertainment event not too long ago, and I thought it was kind of outrageous what Ticketmaster was charging to process my ticket, but it sure wasn't $68 for them to mail me my ticket. Now, the third issue that we're dealing with is whether it is greater, or the expense is greater than the actual expense. And so we kind of get into a question of what we mean by expense. Of course, I give some examples of some other statutes, including those in the Code of Criminal Procedure, wherein we're talking about some statutes say $1 plus postage. Others are actually confined just the expense of postage. And I submit that charging arbitrarily, coming up with a figure of $68, is pretty clearly in excess of the cost, the actual cost or expense in sending a letter by certified mail. I just don't see how any other conclusion could be reached. I would point out to the court that as recently as 2009, I cite a case from the Court of Criminal Appeals where they point out, although they don't mention the fact that it kind of has been Texas history for over 150 years, that court costs are non-punitive in nature. They're basically to restore the court the actual expenses incurred in these kind of proceedings, both civil and, as in this case, criminal proceedings. They're not a windfall for the Denton County Clerk's Office to come up with a figure of $68 and make who knows how much money. There's not a whole lot of money, as I indicate in this particular case. My client has now, we said at the time of the brief, was 137 cases. I think we're getting closer to 200 cases now. And what happens is because under Attorney General's office opinion, the district attorney's office can be charged these filing fees or court costs or this certified mail fee because they're immune, according to the Attorney General's office. When they file their lawsuit, they don't have any reason to complain about the clerk's office charging it because they're going to ask the court to make the defendant surety or principal pay that court cost. Their argument seems to be that the court, their argument in this brief that they filed is, the court has jurisdiction to award us the $68, but it doesn't have jurisdiction to deny us the $68. That the plaintiff, or the defendant in this case, needs to go file another lawsuit after the case is over, after the judge has entered a final judgment and adjudicated the issue, that somehow the correct process would be for us to go back and sue them separately. And I think, as I indicate, that is not only collateral estoppel, but it certainly res judicata. They can't seem to, and they don't even attempt to explain how it is that all the cases that I cite talking about the difference between the ministerial act of the clerk doesn't preserve error, that you have to raise an objection, as we did with the trial court, and the trial court has to adjudicate that error. Then you've preserved the issue for appeal, and there are several appellate cases dealing with whether a trial court has erred when awarding court costs. That is, cannot be reconciled with their argument that courts only have jurisdiction to award $68 for a $3 process. They don't have jurisdiction to deny $68 for a $3 process. So I submit to you, this is a relatively simple case. I would urge the court to write on it, and I would urge the court to publish it, because it does appear to be something that, for whatever reason, has not been brought to any other court's attention. And I think that if it's true, as the state suggests, that there are other counties in addition to Denton County who are gorging not just bondsmen, but people in all civil proceedings for $68 for a $3 certified mail letter, it needs to be corrected, and it needs to be addressed by the legislature if there's some other kind of thing that needs to be done. But the law is pretty clear. Commissioner's Court has to approve it. In this case, they didn't, from the schedule of minutes that they provided. They're talking about personal service. Number two, it has to be reasonable. 20 to 25 times more than the $3 for certified mail, I don't think is reasonable. Even if you thought it was reasonable to charge somebody $68 for certified mail, it would be, under the statute that restricts the amount that can be assessed, it is greater than necessary to pay the expense. In the Attorney General opinion that I cite in the brief that relieves the District Attorney's Office from having to pay the $68 when it loses, they say that the salaried positions of the clerk's office are an indication that that is not an actual expense. That is, their elbow grease or whatever it takes to lick an envelope or to type up the address is not an expense because they're on salary, and that was factored into the Attorney General's opinion. For that reason, I think in this case what we're talking about is the expense means the cost of the postage and nothing more. And so what we're asking the court to do is to reverse the trial court's decision and remand for it to be for court costs to be awarded for this certified mail at nothing greater than the cost of postage. We could probably live with a dollar, like another statute says, a dollar plus postage.
Yeah, what is that statute? I remember reading about it.
Yeah, the statute is actually refers to, I don't know, I may need to find it. There's a statute dealing with expunction. I set out two or three statutes.
Yeah, there was one you were talking about that allows for a dollar or a dollar and a half.
No, it's a dollar plus postage. It's in the brief, and I can, if I need to, I can follow up the letter brief.
That's okay. I can find it.
Yeah. So the bottom line is this case should be published because it is something that certainly we need to, I don't want to have to be coming back down here another 200 times on these other cases. And I think it would serve the public interest for everybody to see. And if there's a dispute about it, the legislature can certainly resolve the problem. I'll return the remainder of my time on opening and reserve the 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I have one question. Is it true that the only purpose of the hearing was to try the only contested issue, which was the reasonableness of this fee or the legitimacy of the fee?
That's correct. In our response to the motion for summary judgment, we said this is the only issue that we want to raise, and it was on a summary judgment.
Okay.
I also, even though there was some confusion in the trial court, I believe the state handed them the wrong judgment or the wrong order. Instead of handing them an order, they handed them a judgment. There is case law, and I cite a particular case that does not remove jurisdiction from the court. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McClure.
Good May it please the court. The purpose of a bond forfeiture hearing is to show just cause why the criminal defendant did not appear for their court case. In the underlying trial court decision, they looked at whether there was any defenses asserted, and there were none for the criminal defendant not to appear. Therefore, the trial court awarded 40% of the bond to the state and court cost. These court costs are in line with Dees versus State, which is a criminal court of criminal appeals opinion that came down in 1993. And that holding in that case was that once a judgment in ISI has been filed, that sureties and principals are liable for court costs, civil court costs. And
well,
also,
I don't think they're arguing whether they're liable for it. I think they're arguing the basis for the amount.
Correct. I'm just going to, this is just for informational purposes of where the judge went with this case and why he decided it the way he did. And also, that's also in line with Texas Rules of Civil Procedure 131, where the prevailing party has their cause paid for. To get to the meat of the matter of this issue, I believe this is just not the proper forum for determining whether court costs are reasonable. A separate action against the commissioner's court, against the county, against the district clerk. They're the ones that commissioner's court approved these fees, set these fees.
Well, maybe I think that's a question you did.
Of course, yeah, I agree.
So if they haven't approved fees, why would you bring an action against the commissioner's court that didn't do anything?
Because there's past cases where they're alleging that these fees have been charged improperly, that they're unreasonable.
So every single time, all 200 times, $68 is charged, they're supposed to bring an action against the commissioner's court as opposed to up here where it was published, we can settle it once and for all.
Well, what I'm proposing is that the proper way to bring an action is one case. Bring a case against the commissioner's court, against the district clerk, opposing the reasonableness of the fees. That way the court, the county, commissioner's court, district clerk can be a party to the case. But, and a bond forfeiture action.
But I don't see anything that shows the commissioner's court has established a $68 fee for service by certified mail.
They have not.
How are they a party to this?
There's a $60 fee that's established.
By service by?
Which one?
Yeah,
that's in my exhibit number 3. I'm referring to appendix 2 in my brief where there's a bill of cost and it does say $68, but I wanted
here?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And
but
I wanted
that just where you build them.
Yeah,
right.
That have to be the commissioner's court established.
Commissioner's court established it under flipping through. Commissioner's Court Order 060538, which on September 5th, 2006, they set forth the fees for the constables and the sheriffs. And that is under, I apologize, Appendix 2 is behind, I'm sorry, Appendix 3, which is behind the Bill of Cost Appendix.
Is that long list that has a bunch of 60s on it?
Correct.
There's
not a 68 because it is only $60. There's a separate fee for $8 that's under a different statute for issuance of citation.
Okay, well, would you show me here which of these 60s is what you're talking about?
Under the Siri facius.
Siri face?
Thank you. That is a bond forfeiture action under Code of Criminal Procedure 22.10. They're considered Siri facius cases, and it's accounted for under this fee schedule. And also, there's just a general citation fee, which could apply to any type of citation, which is also $60.
Okay. And the $8?
The $8 is the issuance fee, which is covered under a different statute, which is 51.317 and 318.
Was it approved?
That is a separate statute, which specifically says it's $8 for that particular fee. It does not have to be approved. That's a separate statute for the district clerk's office.
All right.
Is that $8 fee something that's applicable to every district clerk office for that service?
For every citation that's issued, and there's two on the, going back to the cost, the bill, bill of cost schedule, you'll see that there's two $8 fees. One is for the criminal defendant, and one is for, is tagged on with a certified mail fee for the surety. So that's where we get the, it's not an arbitrary number, that's where that number comes from. But going back to...
Well, I have one more question. So if the constable picks up the phone and calls Richard's client and says, got a bunch of citations here, you want to come pick them up? He says, sure. Goes down and picks them up. They still charge $68 per citation.
That's the part of the problem with doing the, handling this issue within a bond forfeiture action is that the property parties are not before the court to testify to those issues, to whether or not how things are served, the reasonableness of it.
No, I'm just asking about the cost, about the charge, what you charge. So if somebody just comes by and picks them up, nobody has to use any gas to go serve them, nobody has to take any time. I mean, they just come by the office and pick them up, which you know is common practice. They're still charging the $68.
I personally cannot attest to whether they do that or not.
Okay.
Well, you keep talking about that the proper party got before the court, so you couldn't get evidence. Why not? Call them as a witness. Take a deposition. What does that have to do with it?
Because this is a particular bond forfeiture action, and there was never any countersuit against the district clerk, the county, regarding this issue. It's a collateral attack on the actions of the commissioner's court and the district clerk, and they're not before the court to defend themselves. There's evidence that could be brought in, and it could even be some issues for a jury. And absolutely, if opposing counsel's client thinks that this fees unreasonable, they should absolutely have their day in court, and so should the county and the district clerk's office on this issue.
But if they didn't raise it here, wouldn't we say in a subsequent lawsuit, you missed your chance? I mean, you've waived it. That seems like that would be the
I don't think that there's
likely
a
result.
Ray Judiscotta issue
so
on this.
On the record on behalf of Denton County and the various people involved, they will not raise res judicata or collateral estoppel.
I don't believe so, because the underlying trial court decision did not have was not based on whether or not the fee was reasonable or unreasonable. So that issue is still alive out there. And
is that a guess?
That is a guess on my part. I mean, that's my opinion on the issue. I can absolutely do a letter brief on that issue if you would like me to and submit it to the court. He also brought up, I want to also give you a couple of cases, other type of fee cases that where they did sue the county and sued the official who was wrongfully assessing the fee. And one of those is Camacho versus San Diego out of El Paso. That's where the sheriff's department was collecting a fee that the commissioner's court approved but was not backed by statute. And in that case, they sued the sheriff and the commissioner's court. And also there's Dallas County versus Schweitzer that came out a few years back, 881 Southwest 2nd, 757. Again, improper fees were being charged. They sued the county. They sued the official that was collecting those fees. So I believe that that's the proper way to go about this type of issue. That way all the parties are involved and can have their day in court on this issue. In a bond forfeiture action, that's not the purpose.
But the trial court imposes reasonable court costs. I mean, it's the trial court that does it. You've got to challenge it in the trial court when the trial court's doing it.
Yeah, because I don't think they have standing. Otherwise, they have to be involved in some action where they have been injured to the extent of $68 as opposed to just some, well, we don't like this fee, we're going to sue the commissioner's court. What's their standing just in general?
Their standing is the thousands of cases that have gone before that they believe that they were overcharged on. And there was never a ruling on whether or not those fees were reasonable or not. That issue is still alive and can be litigated.
Why wouldn't a statute of limitations prohibit that?
It might on, I would imagine that it would on some of them. But we have several hundred of these cases pending, and Denton County right now, and this could all be solved with one case instead of going. We have several hundred with the bonding companies involved that are taking every one of these cases to trial on this particular issue.
During the bond forfeiture case?
Correct.
Okay.
And it's backing up the system. It could be taken care of quickly. I believe this is not the forum for it.
Well, so what? So if you have several hundred cases of doing this, they each individually should go to trial because that's the proper forum? What, or are you saying those aren't the proper forum either? They need to sue
for this,
the commissioner
excuse me.
District clerk. Who do they need to sue, in your opinion?
The district clerk in the county. They're the ones whose actions are being called into question, and they're the ones where they can provide the information. I can't necessarily do that in a bond forfeiture action. I think the court can assess who pays what fees. Absolutely, they have the discretion to do that. But that's not the case. That's not what's being brought up on appeal. The issue is the reasonableness. Well, the bond forfeiture action to begin with was not the proper vehicle to determine the reasonableness of these fees. And with regards to standing, I don't want to spend too much time on that either. But the real party interest is the insurance company. And the insurance company was, it appeared in the pleadings in the trial level, that they were included in as a party. However, on appeal, only the bondsman, Mr. Burgess, was listed as the appellant. He's merely the agent for Seneca Insurance Company to write bonds. And there was a letter attached to the reply to my motion to dismiss, which is really outside the record, and indicating that they can employ an attorney of their choice to represent the bondsman. It really doesn't say represent the insurance company. So one, it's outside the record, and two, it really doesn't say what they, I think, want it to say. It doesn't clarify. And so I just submit that there's lack of standing based on that. There's just not the power of authority given to the bondsman to defend lawsuits on appeal the way it's worded in this in the brief.
But isn't the bondsman the principal?
The bondsman is the agent for the... The principal in bond forfeiture cases is the
defendant.
Criminal defendant who failed to appear.
Okay.
I kind of analogize it like someone suing a State Farm agent on the corner. You wouldn't sue that person. You would sue the insurance company. And it would be handled that way, not necessarily through the agent. And he's not really liable on the judgment itself, the insurance company is. The bottom line is they are liable on the bond.
Well, isn't the insured, we call it the insured, is liable.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why he has an insurance company to pay it. But you don't sue the insurance company, you sue the insured. So I'm
right,
not
but
exactly following.
I don't believe the agent can be considered like an insured party in this. They're just merely the agent to write bonds on behalf of the insurance company.
That if you go seeking this money, don't you seek it from the bondsman when the person that bonded doesn't show up? You don't go to the insurance company.
Yeah.
You go to the bonding company.
We do. Generally, the insurance company has an agreement with their agent, and the agent usually pays the bonds. But that's between the insurance company and the agent, not necessarily between the county and the agent.
The bondsman wrote the bond.
Mm-hmm.
If it's forfeited, the bondsman owes it and hopes it can turn around and get it from its insurance company. So it's really the bondsman, like an insurer, that is the person that's the object of the suit, with an insurance company that normally hires the lawyer for it standing behind it.
I would disagree to the extent that it's really the insurance company that is the person on the line, the entity on the line as far as liability. We do not, if there is unpaid judgments, we go to the insurance company and they are responsible for it. Normally they do have an agreement with their agents to pay, But if they don't pay, then we have no choice but to seek recourse against the insurance company.
Well, that might be where you actually collect on the judgment, but you sue both.
It's
joint and several liability on your judgment right there.
It's mainly for identification purposes of showing what agent wrote the bond for the insurance company. If there's no other questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. McClure.
Thank you.
Mr. Gladden, rebuttal.
Before I forget to do so, Judge D'Affino, the statutes that I was referring to and that you ask about are on page 9 of my brief. As we set out, the section 12.005B of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code provides that the cost of postage, now it says, the fee for services of notice of an action under this section charged to plaintiff may not exceed $20 if the notice is delivered in person, or to the cost of postage if the service is by registered or certified mail. We also refer to Article 102.006 of the Code of Criminal Procedure, where it provides that it's $1 plus postage for notice of a hearing and $2 plus postage for delivery of a final order on expunction. We realize that those are not controlling, but if we're looking at legislative intent, it would be very difficult to say that there's anything in any of the codes that say you can charge $68 for certified mail when that cost for certified mail is only about $3.
The address her approval argument with her 60 plus 8.
Well, that's, I'm not sure that's evidence of anything. I don't see anything in the record. You could surmise. They say the fees list says I interpret it to mean personal service is $60 by sheriff or constable. She's explaining that if you look at the bill of costs, which is actually an exhibit also, I think it's plaintiff's exhibit.
I was looking at the list of approved fees
right.
by the commissioner.
Right. And it doesn't say $68, does it?
It says 60.
That's right.
And then she said there's a separate statute that I didn't
okay.
know about.
Okay, well, no. There's a difference between issuing a citation and serving that citation. And state law does say that the clerk can collect $8 for issuing a citation. That has nothing to do with the service of that citation. And her interpretation of why the clerk is charging $68 is that the clerk considers that additional $8 to be an issuance combined with the service by certified mail. That's her explanation. There is no testimony from anybody that that's where the $68 figure came up with. And if you look, there also is an $8 charge for issuance of the citation and the bill of costs, which is a separate statute, and it's not being challenged in this court, in this case at all. That's not what we're talking about. But, and I don't, quite frankly, I don't care. I don't think there's that much difference between $68 and $60 if you're talking about the actual expense being only about $3.
So are you conceding it's okay to collect the $8 and you're really just...
Not for certified mail.
Okay.
Not for certified mail. If they wanted to collect $8 for the issuance of the citation, we're not disputing that.
Okay.
Now, but
so
that's...
So it's improperly marked in the bill of costs?
I have no idea. I have no idea. Obviously, the state wants this money. They pled for it. They asked for it in their motion, specifically the certified mail fee in their motion for summary judgment. I don't see how they can ask for it and then say, you got to give it to me, but you can go sue somebody else to get it back. Obviously, we have standing. There's no dispute really about that, in my opinion. There's no merit to their argument otherwise.
What happens when a bondsman doesn't pay these fees?
The county revokes his license, his or her license. In the judgment in this case, it names him as being liable. So he's got standing, and he named himself as doing business as Edie's Bail Bonds and as the local agent for the insurance company. And as far as it being outside the record, the rule we cite, Rule 10, I think is an appellate rule, says that in these kind of situations that it is an appropriate venue or procedure to attach stuff to add to the record, or more or less, to bring to the court's attention. And none of this was raised in the trial court, this idea that, they sued my client, Mr. Burgess, and doing business as, and they sued the insurance company. He's the local agent for the insurance company. We provide that the CEO has, in writing, said that I'm authorized to represent Mr. Burgess is authorized to hire me to represent both of them, and that's what's happened. That's what's been going on. So I think it's kind of a last-ditch effort to try to short-circuit this proceeding. If the county commissioner's court wants in this lawsuit, they could have intervened just like in any other civil case they thought they had an interest in. Same thing with the district clerk if they want to intervene. And so I think it's kind of absurd to say that that there's any question about the parties both. And, of course, you got the doctrine of virtual representation that I mentioned in my response as well. We have a complete identity and privity, identity of interest, et cetera. If there's no further questions, I will return what non-existent time I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gladden, Ms. McClure. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing. Your case is submitted, and you are excused. We will take about a 10-minute recess before we pick up our 10:30 docket.